My name's Dr. Sarah Metcalf, one of the medical editors of Australian Family Physician, and today I have with me one of the authors of the article that appeared in our December edition on juggling resources, If This, Then, Resource Allocation in a Finite World. And one of those authors is Dr. Patrick Burns, who's a senior lecturer in general practice at the University of Queensland and also a general practitioner in Bundaberg. Welcome, Dr. Burns.
Thanks, Sarah.
So all GPs know that time is very valuable, and the way we use it can affect not only patient outcomes but also our own well-being. In this article, you've taken a look at the way we use our time in general practice in Australia today and some of the evidence of benefit for effort. And to do that, you've looked at three different areas of the work we do in general practice. Can I just ask you to explain the way that you've divided that for the listeners?
Yes, well, I'm a practicing GP and I still work 4 days a week in a provincial town, so I know about the time pressures. So,
yes.
Yeah, so the theory is that general practice really consists of three areas. It consists of our traditional acute care. This is treating people who are sick, you know, looking after them, sending them to hospital, getting them back from hospital, doing all the paperwork. Then we also now do planned secondary and tertiary prevention, all this chronic disease management stuff, which really is a newish area of general practice in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yes.
And I guess also the third area is the primary prevention, which we've become much more formalised in doing, such as adult and childhood immunisation, pap smears, health checkups, and this type of stuff. So there's three areas that we spend time in general practice.
Yes.
And so then I had a... There's some really interesting work from America and Canada on this. And so I looked at the time demands in these fairly new two areas, which is the planned secondary and tertiary prevention and the primary prevention. And the Americans have worked out that if a standard family doctor with a standard patient load did all the recommended standard primary health prevention for their patients, it would take 7.4 hours per day. And then
it's quite astonishing, really, isn't it?
That's quite a lot. And then the Canadians went one better and they said, well, what would happen if this standard doctor then did the standard amount of chronic disease management and it was 3.5 hours a day if they were well controlled and 10.6 hours per day if they were not well controlled? So we're up to about 11 to 18 hours per day and that's not doing any acute stuff. So
no.
So we then thought, well, are we forgetting our acute role? I mean, really, we're doctors. We treat sick people. I mean, that's what we're trained to do. These other two roles have sort of been devolved upon us really over the last 20 years to a great extent. And so we looked at that, and there is some evidence that really acute care may be suffering a little bit. So we looked at the United States, and what we saw was really interesting in the United States is that there's a rapid proliferation of acute care centres, urgent care centres they're called, UCCs, and they've got 9,000 up and running at the moment. And they're just doing really, really simple stuff that we would regard as mainstream acute care stuff in general practice, you know, ear infections, strep throats, influenza, some minor injuries, not serious injuries, you know, simple fractures that don't require reduction, simple lacerations, you know, superficial ones. That's basically all they do. And so I thought, well, what's going on in Australia? So I looked at the item numbers between 2007 and 2012 just for three very, very simple things, such as fractures that don't require reduction, superficial lacerations of face and other areas, and they've all declined. Whereas the item numbers for everything else have gone up. And so not only haven't they kept stable, they've actually declined. And
so it's a small snapshot, isn't it, that might suggest.
It's a little tiny snapshot. I mean, but the reason I picked those item numbers is that was what specifically the urgent care clinics in the United States focus on. They're focusing on those two types of superficial lacerations and the simple fractures that don't require reduction. And so I thought,
I wonder who's staffing those centres in the US. you know, it seems it's interesting, isn't it? Whether
it's doctors,
taking people out,
it's doctors.
Yeah, but taking people out of traditional family practice or
yes,
from
I
the emergency
know.
Department sort of background, it's interesting.
Yes, and so I think it's always useful to look at trends overseas in other countries that have our standard of medicine. And I mean, we haven't seen that in Australia yet, but, you know, and then I thought, and I didn't put this in the article, but I thought, gee whiz, you know, really skin clinics came about because GPs were not upskilling and delivering that service. And that was deficient. And then all of a sudden these skin cancer clinics really trained GPs up, and they specifically did these things, and they hived off an area of general practice, and they trained up their GPs, and they delivered a service. And I thought, perhaps the next chain that's coming in Australia is urgent care clinics. And I thought, well, do we really want that?
And so then you sort of had a look at what we're doing now in general practice and you know, is there time we're wasting, and could we be doing things more effectively?
Well, yes. So I thought, well, we're obviously over, if you look at the ideal from the projected hours for primary prevention, then for planned secondary and tertiary prevention, and then add in acute care, we haven't got enough hours in the day. So we're obviously, there's obviously a load or a waste of time coming in somehow. And so I thought, well, perhaps we could just look at it from three ways, you know, sort of perhaps time wasting in general practice can be generated by doctors themselves, you know, really doing things that we have always done and perhaps doing some things for which there is evidence of futility. The doctor may not be aware that the evidence is that you shouldn't do this, or have chosen to ignore that evidence. And that includes not only services, but radiology and pathology ordering and screening activities. And then the second area I looked at was roles. Perhaps doctors are not delegating to nurses when they could. Nurses are not delegating to administrative staff when they could. The practice team is not using IT software to the maximum efficiency to cut down use of staff hours. And then the third area, of course, is Medicare stroke government generated. Really, we're driven by definition of MBS item numbers and perhaps, say, create perverse incentives for us to perform tasks that actually have no evidence of benefit and waste our time.
I mean, it's a reflection often of you know, when new evidence comes out, it's sort of well known that it can take years before that evidence is integrated into practice. And I think, that the system is often really slow to catch up, unfortunately.
Yes. And so the article, we then looked at some articles for some doctor-generated time-wasting things. And, say, even with the practice nurses, there was a nice article in the MJA which described how the roles of practice nurses in general practice fitted into six roles. But in actual fact, organiser and quality controller, those tasks are often done by administrative people in the UK and America. And so the organisational activity, specifically such as maintaining a morbidity database, recalling patients for chronic disease management and all that type of thing, they're really clerical tasks. And so, you know, it's not just doctors not delegating, it's nurses not delegating either. And I guess a couple of good examples of Medicare, a government-induced waste, is... A pretty good one is over 75 medicals, actually.
Yes.
Very expensive, you know, sort of cost $87 million in 2012. And if you actually look, there's been a couple of systematic literature reviews published in 2000 which showed no sound evidence in favour of health assessments. And then you can say to yourself, well, are we actually doing something that we shouldn't be doing? And then... there's actually been a really nice, there was a large Australian randomised controlled trial of health assessments in almost 1,600 veterans and war widows aged 70 and over. And And the interesting thing is there was no significant difference in the probability of hospital admission or death in between the intervention and control groups.
Mm.
But there were significantly more participants in the intervention group were admitted to nursing homes. Now, you could argue that this was identifying need and therefore it was offering a better care. But you've got to say from the country's point of view, we've already got enormously long waiting times for beds in nursing homes.
Yes.
Do we want to make that longer? And at the end, we offer a few time-saving suggestions, mainly from stuff that we do in our own practice.
Yeah, some of these were really, really good practical things.
Yeah, so I guess what we do in our own practice is that we have a template with acute bookings for each doctor each day, which are only released on the day. Now, I know a number of other practices do that too. And the other alternative is I know of other practices in town that has a doctor of the day and they just start the day with no appointment. So they're just purely acute all day long.
Yes, so you've got that capacity should it be required, and also the doctors are maintaining their skill level in that area as well.
Yeah, so you're seeing the acute stuff and the patients know that if they have a laceration at work or they have something that they can actually come to you and they will get in quickly. The other thing we do in our practices is we run quick clinics every morning and every afternoon, every morning at 8:30 and every afternoon at 4:30. It's just walk in, no appointment needed. And it's for children 16 and under who've been acutely unwell for 24, 48 hours.
Mm.
And so that taps the, they've been sick overnight, or that taps, I picked them up from school and they're sick and what am I going to do overnight? And the other thing, in midday, we decided that some of the appointments that people rang up, they perceive as urgent, but in actual fact, they're urgent from the point of view of administrative urgency. My scripts are running out today. I haven't got any scripts for tonight. I need a referral letter for my specialist tomorrow.
We get a lot of those.
and so these are administratively urgent things, but they're not medically urgent. And so we have a walk-in clinic, which is just for paperwork or script. Okay, you can get a script, you can get your paperwork. And what we do at the script clinic is we actually use it as a recruiting tool for our chronic disease management clinics. We say, okay, you got your script today, here's your booking for you're due for a chronic disease management clinic, and you make the appointment on the way out. So we use it as a recruiting thing for chronic disease management.
Yes. Oh, I could see how that would work quite well.
Yeah, but the concept of administrative urgency is quite a useful concept.
Mm, that's right. And then you also had a bit of a look at the Medicare system as it is at the moment, and there were a few things about that you thought could change. So obviously, as per our discussion earlier, perhaps the 75-plus health assessment is not necessarily something that's of value.
Well, the thing is, if you've got someone who's over 75 who's got an obvious illness, the logical thing is to do a chronic disease management plan on them. And really, if you're doing a chronic disease management plan properly and not just dropping in a template and signing off on it, you should be looking holistically at the patient anyway. So you're going to get the people who have got an illness. Now, when those systematic reviews looked at the over 75 medicals, the people that really significantly did not benefit from an over 75 medical were the well over 75s. It was just a total waste of money. The only people where there was a little bit of benefit were the people who had an obvious illness, and you're going to get those with the chronic disease management item numbers.
Yeah. So hopefully we should be able to do the same work just under a different banner.
Yeah.
And then the abolition of the nurse item numbers came up, and I know a lot of practices have sort of noticed the problem following that.
Well, we had sort of streamlined our roles. We had arranged for a couple of our practice nurses to do their Pap smear course, and we had arranged for those two practice nurses to do their immunisation course so that they were designated Pap smear providers in a general practice and designated immunisers in a general practice. And once they'd done those courses, the patients didn't actually need to see us. they could just flow straight into the nurses. But now, these days, for all of those things, really, I, like all the other GPs around Australia, are charging briefs. And we say, yes, you need a pap smear, go to the nurse. Yes, you need an immunisation, go to the nurse. So it's mucking up our workflow. It's just really, you know, it was really done by a government that didn't appreciate that. I know they made a lump sum payment for nursing duties, but they didn't realise that there is no way that any GP is going to have a patient walk into the practice, use up consulting room time, use up consulting room resources, and not charge anything on the day. And the only way you can charge on the day is to see them.
Yeah.
And so it's mucking up our workflow. It's just crazy stuff.
And
I guess another government-generated idea is which is increasingly frustrating for GPs, is the authority phone script. I mean, I, like other GPs, it's just got worse lately. I've been timing it in the last week because I know this phone call it was coming along, and I've been waiting at least 3.5 minutes for every single authority script now.
And that's it adds up over the course of a day.
Enormous waste of time. They never knock you back. It's just an example of government-induced time waste.
Correct, yes. Okay, so I guess to summarise, Dr. Burns, sort of what do you see as the potential implications if we don't start to address some of these things in Australian general practice?
Well, I guess there were two points in the article. I really wanted people to have just a framework to look at things, to realise that there was a problem with time, and that really we can't afford to be passive as GPs in our own practice. We've got to make decisions in our own practice as to where we're going to spend our time rather than just bumbling on from day to day. And I think that's probably the message to take home, is that time is valuable and you have to make active decisions about how you use your time.
Yes, and GPs, to a large extent, do have that freedom because of the general practice model in this country.
Well, we, for instance, after that study came out, we abandoned over 75 medicals. We don't do over 75 medicals at all. We just make sure that all our over 75s that have chronic diseases go through the chronic disease management clinics.
There certainly are ways we can make some changes and see what works in the individual practices.
And if I can put a plug in for another article.
Yes,
can I do that?
Certainly. Absolutely.
I must say that Jenny Doust and Paul Glasziou's article on "Is the Problem That Everything Is a Diagnosis" is a great article to read. And it's very thought provoking, and it's not the same as mine, but it sort of links in quite nicely.
It does, absolutely.
And I didn't know they were writing it.
Oh, well, there you go. Yes, it sometimes all comes together. So, yes. That one's in the same issue in December, and I did have a chat to Jenny the other day as well, so there's a podcast on that one too. All right, well, thanks so much for your time, Dr. Burns. It's food for thought, I think.
Yes, okay.
Thank you.